Good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller and special guest Chad Conley. Live from Sharp Fences Gallery, here's your host, Ann Eller.
Well, that's right. We are here at Sharp Fences Gallery on the 72 bypass. I met Chad Conley back when the swearing-in ceremony for Jeff Duncan. He gave an excellent, excellent tour of the Capitol building. He is passionate about history. I believe he's passionate about our country. He's written a book called Freedom Tide. I did read the book.
Good for you.
I read the book. Okay.
It's not a hard read.
No, it's not a hard read. But Chad also wants to be the chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party coming up, so he's campaigning for that, as well as trying to get his message out there. How are you doing today, Chad Conley?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. You're very sweet to invite me on.
Well, you know, we had such a good time. We spent a little time on the air while we were up there, and we had a great time talking, and it just seemed like this would be a good time to sit down and talk about what's going on with our country.
Yes. Well, you know, the tour in D.C. was a blast. We had some wonderful people on the tour, and I was telling somebody yesterday, I think I was talking to these guys actually, and having that many people tour the Capitol in the evening, thank goodness the regular tourists weren't in there.
Right.
I've never taken that big a group. I've done the fives and the tens and maybe even the gusts up to 20 or 25, but I think we had 65 people that to go through the U.S. Capitol, so that's quite a big crowd of folks, and it was wonderful. That was really a lot of fun.
Well, I think people really enjoyed it, and one of the things that you brought, Chad, to the whole event that was going on up there, you were able to talk about the history, whereas so many people give tours, they talk about the size, as you said, and this type of thing, but they don't know the history.
Yeah, I try to give the disclaimer when I do that, and I say, look, guys, I'm not here to tell you exactly what year it was built or what year it was burned down or what year it was rebuilt or what the dimensions are. I just really get into the stories of the people because for some reason, it seems like we've lost touch of our history. I wasn't a big history fan growing up or government or any of that stuff because it seemed like sometimes I had the baseball coach that was teaching the class and he was just getting us out to the field, you know, and he didn't have a passion either. But when I started going up there and reading these stories and hearing historians like Marshall Foster and David Barton, I started realizing there's more to this deal. If you get your statue in the Capitol, everybody knows. That's a big deal. They've done something
important.
But when you start looking into it, you realize what monumental effort these folks put forth. Just feel like they were called to step up and step in for our country.
Well, you know, our country, we had a big election last fall. A lot of changes came down. Right now in the Capitol, they have the House did pass a $61 billion. We don't even know how to equate a billion dollars, do we?
No.
You know, it used to be $1 million was a lot. Now we're into trillions. So, but they passed this $61 billion budget reduction. They've sent it off to the Senate. When they come back, they've got 4 days. The Senate has 4 days to say yay or nay or what we can negotiate this.
Right.
I'm a little actually disappointed in the Senate because
I've been disappointed in the Senate for years.
But at this point in our government, though, with what we have going on, it would seem like they could have come back a few days early to give them a little extra time.
You'd have thought.
I talked to Jeff Duncan yesterday. In fact, some of our interview has already been on South Carolina News. And he told me that they probably will have to raise the debt ceiling in order to let them negotiate this thing through. Chad, what do you actually feel about should they negotiate? Should they up the debt ceiling? What do you think should happen?
You know, for years and years and years, Americans have looked at government, and we've seen the largesse, we've seen the extra spending, we've seen the waste, we've seen the fraud, and people just think, hey, we got to do something about this eventually. You know, my personal preference is that let's rip the Band-Aid off because somebody's got to put an end to this spending. It's out of control. Americans don't live their lives just spending money, spending money, spending money, spending money. Anybody that has any attitude of responsibility eventually says, wait a minute, the credit card's maxed out, we're out of money. Hey, kids, we're not going out to pizza and go to the movies. We're not going to spend money on that candy in the grocery store line. We've got to be responsible. You know, I teach my kids there's assets and there's liabilities. Assets put things in your pockets, liabilities take them out. There's needs and there's wants. We really need to have a place to live. We got to have food to eat, got to have clothes to wear. That candy you'd like or that extra little toy or that video game, those are wants. And there's times that you get your wants, but you got to work for them. But there's times that you need your needs. That's always. And so let's put the needs into a priority. What Congress has to do is what the Republican Congress just did, is they started saying there got to be priorities. Now, Michelle Bachmann said Saturday that the number was actually $100 billion. But as Reagan said, if you keep adding some zeros, eventually you get to some real money here. But we've gotten such a desensitivity to this spending. You know, it's just out of control everywhere you look. It's at the local, the state, the national level. I say don't raise the debt ceiling. We've got to make a determination that enough
is
enough.
Oh, my God, you mean we should shut the government down?
Yes, shut it down. Let
totally.
It sit.
Totally?
Absolutely. You know,
wow.
A few years ago, and I know this is not popular, it's not easy, I think we got to get to a point where we're negotiating in real terms. We need to say enough's enough. Let's find some real ways to cut. And if the Senate isn't willing to come back and negotiate those things, then so be it. Then let it shut down for a time, because we're so out of control that people don't have a touch in touch with reality anymore.
Shut the government down. Pay no one.
Yeah, eventually we've got to make a decision to do that.
Wow.
Now, if we don't raise the debt ceiling, if we raise the debt ceiling, then we pay all these costs and all these expenses that are going out of control, then all we're going to do is just prolong the inevitable. We've got to make a decision that enough's enough, and we have to stop spending like this. And maybe that's what brings Obama and the Democrat Senate to the table.
Wow. What's the likelihood of that happening?
It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. You know, look, we all know that. It ain't going to happen. I hate it. You hate it. It's not going to happen. We're going to raise the debt ceiling, and we're going to go on like this and continue to bust the bank, I'm afraid. Until we win the Senate and win the presidency back, maybe we can make something happen. You know, I have so much respect and admiration for Governor Walker in Wisconsin right now. He's saying, I'm trying to negotiate with you. You've already spent. You've been living off the high hog for so long that now you expect the taxpayers to come up with these extra dollars for you just because you work for the government. We don't have the money. We're broke. Governor Kasich said it in Ohio last night. You know, it's going all over the country. And I guess what reality is, if we don't raise a debt ceiling, you literally have states going broke. Well, then how do you ask the other states to bail them out? We've got to get spending under control. I know it's on a much bigger scale, but it's the same as in my household, your household, anybody else's households who's listening. You can't spend what you don't have, and eventually you got to pay the piper.
So, okay. Well, how's this for an interesting start to today's show, folks? Hey, we're going to hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be back in just a moment. I am here with Chad Conley. We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff, and he's pretty pumped up today, so don't you go away. We'll be right back.
This year will be a simpler year, one fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love, a diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
You're with us at Meet Me at the Diner, host Ann Eller with special guests. Chad Conley, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We started explosively here, and it'll probably continue to be that way. Hey, if you have a question for us, just give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Give us a call. Chad Conley is here today. He does want to be the next chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party. Now, Chad, you have been... You were born in Prosperity.
That's right.
It's one of my favorite places.
Big
I wish
city.
I had a mailbox down there in Prosperity, South Carolina.
Big city.
Big city. But, you know, the name really says it all, doesn't it?
You remember that the signpost that Rush Limbaugh kind of made famous? It's in Newberry, and it shows Clinton left and Prosperity right.
Yes.
That kind of put us on the map. That was in the mid-90s.
Yeah, it's a great name.
It is a great name.
And, you know, one of the things that I think that a lot of us have forgotten is how much prosperity we have produced in our country.
Yeah.
And now, in the 60s, I think, things started to change, though, didn't they? We started looking at government to provide.
That's right. And it's a big difference. I've talked about this in my book. We started expecting government to solve our problems. Our country was founded on the idea of self-government, personal responsibility, accountability for you and your family and the people around you. You know, I'm a Christian, and we believe churches ought to provide for the poor, the infirm, and the widows. Well, we've taken that responsibility out of the church, by and large, and we've given it to the government. It's a whole different mindset than what it was. You know, you look at America. 5-6% of the world's population, yet we produced more Nobel Prize winners, more inventions, more innovation, more creativity has come out of America. And it's not because we've got the best people or we've got the best resources or our energy is stronger and better than anybody else. It's because we've given a government that gave the free market the reign. Government stayed out and didn't intervene in the free enterprise system until much more recently, and started to intervene and dictate to business owners and entrepreneurs what they could and should do. And that's what's starting, I think, stifle the expression of the free market system right now.
Sure. I was reading your book, and it's called Freedom Tide. And one of the things that it talks about in the book is who was the emperor in, was it Rome?
Yes.
Yes. Nero. And what did he say something about?
Tax some more. You know, he just believed that government was the end all, and of course he debased the currency. He taxed people into oblivion. He was a big government guy. He just thought that that was the way to go.
Right.
Kind of sounds familiar.
Roman Emperor Nero said, tax and tax again. See to it that no one owns anything. And that was in 274 A.D.
That's right. It's not a new concept. Of course, Marx picked it up in 1848 when he wrote the Communist Manifesto. He said the way to abolish the free market or capitalistic system was private property taxes, was to tax people who were doing the work. You know, there were those of us that think, man, if you don't have a stake in what's going on, here you are paying all the taxes and you're supporting the whole system. How are we going to sustain this? There's only two things. There's producers and there's non-producers. If you really want to help the non-producers, then you better encourage the producers. You better help them build their business. You better help them become successful. Instead, what we do is we penalize the producers, and we try to take that money and effort we give to the non-producers and don't expect anything out of them. We got a mess. We're in a problem. Our entire attitude in the country has changed, and you're right. I got to think it's got something to do with the 1960s and maybe some of the stuff that was floating in the air at the time.
Right. Well, we were talking about...
I don't know if you catch that or not.
Yeah, I did catch that. All right. But anyways, there is... we started the Great Society.
Yes. World poverty.
We lost?
Yeah, we've lost. It's done. Reagan said it years ago. The world poverty's lost. You know, we paid trillions of dollars out trying to help people. I did a study. I was doing this thing for something in my Sunday school class, actually, talking about the idea of tithing and the efficiency of that, and almost all the dollars actually get where they're going. You know, there's a single mom with four kids in my hometown or in my church town, and our Sunday school class has a coffee service. We're giving money to help her. And she's trying to help herself, and she was in an abusive situation and all that thing. All that money goes to help those four children that she's trying to raise right now. When the government does stuff, you know, when I started researching this whole idea, there's an American Philanthropic Society, and I got to get all the persnickety details of that, but they rate organizations and charitable giving, what percentage of the money you collect actually goes to the person for which it was intended. And they look at the Salvation Army.
Or administration costs.
United Way. They look at all of them.
Right.
And do you know one of the lowest ones? They say that anything that's below 50%, don't give your money to.
Right.
Do you know where the American government is in regard to the welfare system? Do you know that 28 cents of every dollar that goes for taxes for welfare actually gets to a welfare recipient? That means that we have a 72 cents per dollar overhead and heavy entitlement system just to administer the 28 cents. I say give the money back to the people, let them give to the folks based on what they believe they're supposed to be doing in a God-given society. We have a mess. We've inverted the system, and it can't sustain itself anymore.
So what's the answer, Chad?
I think the answer is we got to go back to a more limited form of government. We got to get government back to its roots, actually doing what the Constitution calls for it to do. You know, the founders...
Oh, so you're a constitutionalist.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're conservative, huh?
Yes, extremely. I'm a conservative.
Conservative.
Yes. I don't mince words on that. I'm not riding the fence, don't have any splinters in those places or anything. I believe that the founders did something remarkable, and they gave us a system of government that has produced... Now we're looking at almost 235 years under one document. That's amazing.
It
235 years, we're the longest-standing constitutional republic in the history of man. And for all of our problems and all of our situations, America is still the greatest place on the planet to live. We're the place where people fight and die to come. Nobody in Greenwood or Prosperity or our counties are tearing their houses down and going to the beach and floating away with the scraps to go to Cuba or North Korea or places like that that don't have our freedoms. People are coming here. They're fighting, they're dying to come here because they want this thing called freedom.
So we want our freedom, but we've kind of given it up.
You know, I think so. I think we've expected government to do more and more and more. And Jefferson said the natural tendency of things is for liberty to yield and government to grow. And I don't believe they know how to stop. You know, they justify themselves. That you look at the expenses of any government entity, anything, even the people who are working within the system know, man, we're wasting a lot. I remember out speaking, I've been speaking on school choice for 7 years in South Carolina. It's one of the things I do. It's one of the things I'm passionate about. And I just think that free market reforms work better. Early on, I was, and I'll keep the folks, the guilty nameless, but in the Low Country, there was an old school that was, you know, fine. It looked a lot like mine growing up and seemed to be a building that was functioning. They built a new school across the street. And a friend, I was at a Republican meeting, he said, hey, let's go down. I want to show you something. You got a minute? I said, sure. And he took me one of those construction dumpsters, not the Dempsey dumpster deal, but the big construction dumpster, like 6 feet deep and 20 feet long.
Yeah. Yep.
And he said, climb up in there. I said, man, I'm not climbing that trash dumpster. He said, no, just trust me, it's clean. And I got in there, and it was absolutely slap full as far as I could dig down with textbooks in cellophane. They had to spend that money before the end of the fiscal year, so they got the same amount of money next year. And what an injustice to the kids, the parents, the teachers, the taxpayers. And he said, this goes on everywhere. You know it does. I ran for state senate a few years ago and lost. It was getting reintroduced to the idea of rejection. But in
that,
a
humbling experience for you, I expect.
They put all the numbers in the paper. It's very humbling. But
I guess as you're running this time, you're going to do things differently.
I'm doing different. Yeah, I'm going to win this one. But in that whole context, I was looking at, as you're running, how do you come up with something that actually works? And I submitted a proposal. It was the only really good idea I think I had at the time, but this one would work. I said, you know, why don't we do government more like we do business? If you can save some costs and cut some wasteful spending or fraud or whatever else is happening in your department, then let's say you return 5% of that budget back to the coffers at the end of the year. Then let's return 1% to the folks who are responsible for that. Let's give them a bonus. Let's incentivize government to do the things that all the small businesses, the place like we're at right now, has to incentivize their employees and their owners on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis.
Oh, wait a minute. We can't do that because, you know, that's against the government rules,
right. Isn't
it?
Big
business.
If it is, that's a shame.
You know, Wall Street and everything, we can't pay this type of thing, can we?
If they give 10% back, maybe we give 2% in bonuses. If they give 15% back, 3% back in bonuses, we would see an explosion, I believe. I did a talk at a Clemson Strom Thurmond Institute, and I told that story. And it was after, you know, I'd run and lost and all that. And this guy in the back stands up, and he's like the leader. He's the head professor at Strom Thurmond Institute at Clemson. He said, I wrote that empirical formula. I said, I don't know what an empirical formula is for it, but I just know that's common sense to me. In my book business, if people buy big quantities, I give them a discount. If somebody helps me promote it and send it out there, I give them a discount. Those incentives work, and they're the engine, they're the oil that run our American free enterprise system.
It's called capitalism, isn't it?
Amen, sister.
Right. That's right. It sure is. You know, one of the things in your book that I was noticing, it says that, Tim LaHaye said that in 1920, approximately what? One government employee existed for every 100 citizens.
Yeah.
And then what does it say? Today, closer to one American in six works for local, state, or federal government. That's scary.
I'm really glad you picked up on that. That was one of the obscure little quotes. You know, I tried to write the book to make people read it. There's no fluff in it. It's 80 pages of just stuff that's going to make people go, wow, I didn't know that. I wish I was taught that. I spent a year pulling those stats out and making sure they were firm. I mean, nobody's ever questioned that my sourcing or the facts are correct. You know, I've had liberals certainly question whether or not I knew what I was talking about, and I just said, look, you know, prove it wrong. Mr. LaHaye's stat, though, on the how many people now work for some form of government is startling. And, you know, when you work for somebody, you kind of listen to what they say.
Sure.
And, boy, does the example in Wisconsin, Ohio, does that prove it out or what?
Absolutely, it does. You know, we are here, we're talking with Chad Conley. He's written a great book, Freedom Tide. Now you can make a difference. I think it is something we all can make a difference, and we all have talents that we're given here. Like I never knew I could talk on the radio like this, but I sure can. And I'm sure when you started out, you never thought that history and being impassioned about the government and where our country is going was something you'd be interested in.
No, ma'am, I really didn't. I never dreamed it. I really just tried to spend my adult life finding out what I was supposed to do with my life, how to make a difference.
this, and I think we all are. Hey, we are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We're right here, and we are going to hear South Carolina news, a word from our sponsors. We'll be back. We're going to be talking about, God, I think maybe the First Amendment. Maybe we'll get into what's happening in history. Maybe some about what do we think about how our freshmen congressmen are doing. Hey, it's open discussion. Give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. South Carolina News is up next. We'll be back.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
Welcome back to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Our special guest is Chad Conley. Here is your host, live from Sharp Passes Gallery, Ann Eller.
All right, we are here at Sharp Passes Gallery. We are talking to Chad Conley today. He is the founder and president of the Foundation for American Restoration. You know, one of my questions is, it seems like to pull back, to return government to a smaller size, how would you even start doing? I mean, I know we've cut this out of that and we've cut that out of that, but we have so many entitlements. And, you know, you don't want to touch this one and you don't want to touch that one. And, well, what about that one? And then you have one like, Planned Parenthood. They just said, not financing that one. Yeah. How do you make those decisions? I mean, you know, we're just two people sitting here talking about it.
We've taken some first steps. Reagan talked about first principles, going back to the basics, the roots, and I think it starts with a commitment at government at every level to just face reality. We've got to smell the coffee. We got to wake up, see what's really going on, and stop ignoring the truth. We're overspending the people's money. Government has become a bad steward of those tax dollars we give them, and that is at every level. And so one reason I want to run for state party chair is I want to help actively recruit quality people who understand the free market system to run for school boards, to run for county councils, to run for state house and state senate at every level. We've got to get our financial house in order. You know, the governor talked about last year, if we take this stimulus money, it won't be around again. Just understand, we're not going to have the money. We prolong the inevitable. And that's all well and good. That's nice. It feels good. But let's face it, we've been spending way too much money for a long time. We didn't get in this spot overnight. We won't get out of it overnight. Jeff Duncan, Congressman Duncan, and the guys who are up there right now are taking those first steps. My doubt is that the Senate will go along. I know the President won't, but that's how we got to start it. We have to be committed to cutting government cost, fraud, overlap, redundant programs and policies and organizations that just overlap and spend the people's money like it's going out of style.
Well, I would think the other thing that you would be is quite a separation between the federal government and state.
Absolutely.
Because we have just take the school systems, for example.
Yeah.
How we spend the money, how it comes in, what we have to take.
What a bunch of waste. And look, everybody knows this inherently. You always solve problems closer to the problem. And the further you get away from it, the less regard you have for what's going on. You don't know the players. You don't know the details. And so for the federal government to ever have put their hands in the school system, it's horrible. It's one of the biggest things we ought to reverse in the federal Department of Education. Get the dollars. Let the dollars stay in the states and the local areas. Let the teachers, the administrators, the school boards decide how it's best spent. And that's just the wrong thinking that's been going on for a long time, Ann.
And what about on the state level when it comes to education? Where do you think we
should
be there?
I was reading a blog today. Of course, I've been out there for school choice. It's a Republican Party platform issue. Reagan announced it in a State of the Union address 25, 26 years ago. It's been something I've been passionate about for years and years and years, way before I ever heard of an effort to do so. We're spending way too much money. We're wasting dollars. We hide it. We say that, you know, you poor teachers, we got to cut you, we got to furlough you. But yet, find out today, spending went up again last year. It's $8.4 billion we put into South Carolina education. We're not getting our bang for our buck. Then I found out today, some $763 million are in undesignated fund accounts in the South Carolina Department of Education.
What does that mean?
It means they got extra money. They put money away for a rainy day. They're appealing to our conservative ideals by saving money. Wait a minute, this is a rainy day. It's raining. It's pouring. Cats and dogs. Let's get the money to the teachers and the classrooms. Let's end this crazy bureaucracy that just adds layer of layer of layer. Deputies to the assistant, to the secretary, to the administrators, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We all know how it goes. It's gotten out of control.
You know, this morning on the news, they were talking about in Detroit what is going to be happening with the school system out there. They're going to have one principal handling several schools.
Wow. You know, I grew up with one principal. There was one principal, and he wielded a big old stick, too, and we were scared of him, and we respected Mr. Halfacre, and we didn't cross him, and we did our studies, and then you had problems like chewing gum and pulling a girl's ponytail in front of you, and today we look at the kind of rampant problems. We've taken God out of the schools. We've taken God out of the mix. We don't acknowledge him at all. We say we're neutral about God in America, and it's just not true. There's no neutrality. It's God was the foundation of our country. The principle of self-government was what made our Constitution possible and now successful. We've ignored all those truths like Washington and Jefferson and other leaders pleaded with us to keep and maintain, and now we wonder why things go awry. It's amazing.
It is amazing. You know, they're talking about people will have to get themselves to school. They won't have school buses. I mean, it is amazing the things that they are talking about that they will have to do in order just to keep the doors of the school system open there. And yet you're telling me we have dollars right here
yes.
in South Carolina
yes.
that could solve some of our problems. But here's the other thing. Here's the thing that, you know, nice buildings are great, aren't they?
They're great.
I mean, God,
they teach better, apparently.
I mean, you know, there's nothing like walking into a brand new school and seeing the floors nicely polished and that's just perfect.
We all love new schools.
Yes, we do.
And one thing that Dr. Zase is proposing, I think you've probably seen come up in the State House, is let's don't have a different architectural design for all these different schools. I've been up in the upstate a good bit, Spartanburg, Dorman University up there, right off I-26. If you run
Dorman
by
Dorman University, it is a high
by,
school, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But if you run by there, I'd like you to look up the tree budget, just the tree budget. Now, this was a taxpayer responsibility, and they spent some $250,000 on trees. Now, and they're beautiful. I got to tell you, they're beautiful. I'm sure there's some erosion control benefit. But we're laying teachers off when we're denying kids a great education. When only 44 cents education dollar gets into the classroom, we got our priorities wrong. Trees aren't necessary.
No. And I think a lot of the new buildings, we don't need as
Amen.
Many new buildings as we build.
Especially
here.
In a tough time. You know, the front page of y'all's paper. We're going to improve a stadium. We're going to do the stadium work. But you teachers, I'm so sorry. We just got to lay y'all off. Early on in the gubernatorial race, and I don't know if this got any media coverage at all. Somebody sent me a clip of Dr. Rex being interviewed. And he was being interviewed for, hey, tough times, furloughing teachers, laying off, yes, yes, yes. Dr. Rex, we noticed that since you've been superintendent, you've added 37 people at the Department of Education. And, of course, he hemmed and hawed and stammered and all that stuff. We found the money we needed. Spartanburg has a district right now. It was revealed last year. They paid $1 million in private golf course fees for public school students to go there and play golf, but we don't have money for teachers. We don't have money for classrooms. They had one marketing firm, a marketing firm in a school district. Spartanburg has seven of those, for heaven's sakes. They spent $680,000 that year for a marketing firm for a public school. You know, if people really just peel the onion back a little bit and they started getting involved, this is why I talk about what I talk about. Go get involved. Go be a precinct person for your party. Go get involved in the county convention. Your voice is needed and necessary. And look, I know y'all are busy. I got four children. But I can't look my kids in the eye and say, I'm going to have a better America for you like my parents and grandparents did for me unless we get involved right now and take a stand for what's right.
Well, you know, I agree. You know, it's like that race to the top, right? Brought in federal funding, right? You know, and then whether everybody contributed and was part of it.
Right.
Is it a program that's necessary?
You know, look, all these dollars are throwing in really don't get with their design. And again, when you remove the people who are trying to solve it further away from the situation, you're never going to get efficiency. Remember the 28 cent for the welfare program. I'd rather us keep our tax dollars and spend the money on the things we know need to be spent. These federal mandates that designate dollars go here or go there, those teachers and those administrators at the local level know where the dollars go. So,
we've got to have a level playing field. Come on now. Everybody's got to be equal out there. Come on now.
I wrote about that, too. Equality of outcomes not possible. It's only done through force. Equality of opportunity. That's what we need. And a conservative message is we need equality of opportunity. Same opportunity for everybody. When federal dollars come in and we know they're going to be inefficiently spent, we know they're going to be inefficiently applied, we've got our priorities wrong. common sense stuff, but the most uncommon thing in America, it seems, is common sense.
Well, I think we've let it get away from us, and my biggest concern is, can it be pulled back? Even if each and every one, every person stood up here, would we be able to pull the government back? Are we going to be able to say, you're fired? You know, we're looking at that Trump is talking about running here.
Yep.
You're fired. What are we talking about here?
We've got to start at every little level. People have to recognize the truth. They've got to decide we're going to stop the spending train. It's over. It's done. We see the mess we're in so many areas, and unless people start doing their part right where they are, you know, I might not can impact the national scene, and our school board here might not can impact the scene in Spartanburg County or Oree County, but we can do what we can right where we are, and that's the best place we can apply it.
All right. Well, we are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. It is time for us to hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back, so don't you go away.
Wednesday, happy days. Thursday.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
You're here with us at Meet Me at the Diner. Your host, Ann Eller. Chad Conley's our special guest today. Here is your host, Ann Eller.
All right. We are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. He is the founder and president of the Foundation for American Restoration. And, you know, he wants to make a difference. And, you know, the thing is, I think you need to listen to what Chad has to say. We'll be posting a podcast of this on our website, WLMA.net. So if you didn't get to hear it or you want somebody else to hear it, make sure you check it out right there. It'll be on WLMA.net. Chad, of course, was up there in Washington, D.C. He you started out, history wasn't that important to you. And
no.
Then, you know, I'm kind of like that. You know, I should have paid attention more when I was in school listening to history. I never would have thought I would have been talking about politics and all this kind of stuff. But it really makes a difference when you go back and look at the past. We can't always predict the future, but we can look at the past, and we should learn to avoid some of the pitfalls.
Yeah.
And it just seems that if you read his book, Freedom Tide, now you can make a difference. Start reading about some of the things that he's talking about there. You know, communism, socialism, you know, we talk about all these different things. One of the things you make a big distinction in, though, that I was very interested in, is when we talk about a liberal versus a conservative. And you say they're very definitive, very
yes,
definitive.
There's no question about it. And without getting in all the weeds of how it all got to be where it is, you know, a conservative thinks that you hold things and traditions close to the vest. You believe that the Constitution's a living, breathing document because it still applies. Those are timeless truths. A liberal thinks that we stretch and change it to meet the whims of a changing environment or how people feel or think. And I don't believe that's true at all. Our Constitution, as John Adams said, was made for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate for the government of any other. Well, that means that it's up to us. It's a self-government. It seems like the changes to the Constitution that liberals want to make try to take into account changing mores. That's not right. Those are timeless truths. And when we look at principles that last...
Yeah, but aren't they old? Aren't they old? Come on now,
look,
Chad. How can the Constitution still be relevant today?
Just like the Bible is. You teach your kids. I teach my kids. We teach our grandkids the same principles that our parents taught us. And that's because those things work. You know, I make a kind of a little bit of a joke, and it really ticks off the liberals, but liberals don't live their lives like they say they live them. You know, look at their checkbook. Are they giving away all their money to the poor? No. They don't mind taxing all of us. And are they giving away all their food in their pantry? No. Are they giving away all their clothes in their closet? No. So the things they say and the things they do are opposite. We try to live our lives as conservatives. We believe in tithing through the church. We believe in paying our fair share of taxes. We just think it's so far out of control that it's not even something we recognize anymore in relation to the constitutional government the founders set up. If the foundations be destroyed, what are the righteous to do, the book says. And we're destroying the foundations, the principles, the basic pillars that have made our country successful. All throughout history, look at all these different countries. There's no country, no continent, that can point to the success like America can. So you've got the people who are jealous at us and mad at us, and yet there's so many that want to come here and live and just taste a little bit of that freedom. It's
special. I think it's very interesting when you look at what's happening in Egypt and Libya
yes.
and Bahrain and all these countries. Look at what's happening out there.
Yep.
And you know, then you look at Wisconsin, you know, and I kind of wonder, are people rising up based on the fact that they have seen what is happening over there?
Makes you wonder.
It does make you wonder. It certainly
does. It looks a little bit like community organizers are agitating folks and the unions are trying to impress upon people their need to get out and they're putting down the Republican governor who was voted in, and America just voted for conservative ideals for fiscal restraint and spending cuts and tax cuts. I don't think it's any different what we voted for in November, but surely the unions are not very happy about it. And, yeah, it does look familiar to me, too.
It does. It does. Well, we had a call from Bob Warner. He says, it always gets me when I hear a 30-year-old building is unusable. When I was in England and France, my children attended school in a 100-plus-year-old building. The schools always seemed okay to use for other activities after the new ones were built. They
Amen, brother.
Down.
That's the funny thing is, look at the ones like that, in even in my county in Newberry, we're reusing those buildings for something. They're fine. They teach just fine. You know, I went to school in an old building. My dad went to school in that building, and you know what? It's the town hall now. It got refurbished. My dad was mayor of our little town. He used dollars that had already been set aside. If you don't build a new building, you just refurbish the old one, and it's working fine. It's functioning great. People love it. Thank you, Bob. Amen, and God bless you, brother. You're right.
It is. It is. So, you know, what's the future hold?
Well, you know, I, as a lot of people know, I was widowed a few years ago, and I've been remarried. I've watched God restore my life, and I'm remarried an awesome lady, Dana, who had two little girls, and I've got two little boys, and they're now almost 14, almost 12, 10, and almost 9. And, you know, I tell my kids that God's called us out to go make a difference in this whole world and find out where our niche is, find out what we're supposed to do. People ask me, why do you want to run for chair? It's not something I ever aspired to. It's not something I thought, I want to do that. It's more of a calling. I think God's calling me out to step up and lead in a time we need consistent conservative leadership, somebody who's not afraid to speak the truth, somebody who's not afraid of having microphones or lights stuck in their face and answering the call to just what conservatism really is and how do we get our state and our nation. Look, South Carolina is the belt of the Bible, the buckle of the Bible Belt. We're the reddest of the red states. We're the conservative of the conservative states. We have to lead the way. Next year, we have a presidential preference primary. The whole world will be looking at South Carolina, and I believe I'm in a uniquely qualified spot to lead our party and our state to help pick that right person for the Republicans to nominate to beat Barack Obama in 2012.
Well, it is going to be interesting next year, isn't it?
Sure is.
It's going to be wide open, and already we're seeing so many people coming to South Carolina, whether it's Bachman or all these others that are coming down here and
yep.
testing the waters. It makes it hard, though, doesn't it?
Just getting started. Just getting started. It's going to be an avalanche probably this summer and fall.
Well, you know, I think that that's the thing that that I worry about. Are we going to get? Are we going to take our eye off the ball while
no.
we're trying to elect or go? Because at the end of the
not.
Year, at the end of the year, the four freshmen they're going to be up for re-election again.
I don't know. It's a tough deal. I hope not. You're right, though. It is a danger. But look at the spot South Carolina's in. This is why I've been out all over the state. I've been to 40 counties now, out campaigning for state party chair, talking to GOP folks. We want you guys listening to go to your precinct reorganization meetings. Go to the state website, scgop.com, find out where your county's meeting is, get involved in the county party, go to the county convention, come to the state convention on May 7th. If you get involved where you are, the right things will take place. We're going to have a chance to nominate and be the leaders in nominating the best candidate to beat Barack Obama, and I want to have a front row seat, and I want all you guys to have a front row seat.
Well, that is very true. And then you're talking about redistricting. There's another issue that's
right.
going to be coming up right here very, very soon. And
big
that's
deal.
What the, of course, the state, our state will be looking at big time because we end up with another House seat.
That's exactly right. It's a huge deal, and everybody has a chance to play in the game right now. Don't stay on the sidelines. This is the year to get in the game. If you ever thought, why don't I just get involved, whether it be school choice fight, whether it be just pushing back government largesse and expenses, precinct reorg, whatever your thing is, you need to get involved right where you are and decide to have your voice heard. I appreciate y'all doing that.
Well, you know, I think it's important. You know, I think sometimes, though, people people think that it's hard to take that first step.
It's not, though, and you're right, they do think that. And look, we all tend toward our comfort zones, our cozy little spot, and I'm as bad as anybody. I tell people I'm ambitiously lazy. I want to work really hard so I can enjoy being lazy on my downtime and playing ball with the kids and doing stuff with my four children and my wife and traveling or whatever. But it's not hard to get involved. Precinct reorg is a simple process. You need to find, just go where you vote, find out where your county's having its precinct reorganization. You fill out a simple form. It says, I want to be involved. You put your voter registration numbers and your address and all that on there. Then you come back to the county convention the next month. It's not even that time consuming, but it is a real way that everybody in this county and all other 45 counties in the state can get involved in this process and let their voices be heard.
Now, would this be through the voter registration, or is this through...
It's through the parties.
Through the parties.
They're through the parties, yes. The parties are having precinct reorg. I hope you come to the Republican Party reorganization stuff and vote for me eventually on May 7th. But anybody can get involved. That's right.
Okay.
It's through the parties.
Through the party, through your local level. Well, these are the things that are going on in the world. We didn't really talk much about Freedom Tide. Now you can make a difference, but your book is available.
Yes, you can go to any of my websites. Go to American-Restoration.org. Of course, you can order from Amazon and get it from those guys. It's Freedom Tide. The book title is Freedom Tide. It came from a Reagan quote. But you can go to my website. It's www.American-Restoration.org. Or even email me, chad@freedomtide.com, and I'll send you one. No problem.
All right. So this is a book you can get. It is an excellent book. Maybe will open your eyes and make you think. If it did that, it would have done a lot, wouldn't it?
Yes,
absolutely,
ma'am. Absolutely,
it would. Chad, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You're always a pleasure because you're always so fired up. You are always ready to talk and be here with us. This, of course, as I said, will be posted on our website, WLMA.net, maybe tomorrow before we actually get it up, but it will be there. Chad, you were anything else you got going on here today? Where do you go now?
Actually, I'm heading to Greenville. I'm doing a TV filming. WYFF is filming me do a school choice presentation at a Christian school in Greenville. So just trying to get the word out there about what a different school choice would make in our state, free up the parents and grandparents to make a choice what's school best for their kids.
All right. Well, there you go. You know, this is WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. That's right. I'm Ann Eller. This has been another day at Meet Me at the Diner. Bye-bye, Andy.
Bye, Ann.